Welcome back. This is Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Coming up in the new year, Debbie Harwood is going to be bringing us a radio documentary about the women of New Zealand music business. You might say, didn't they do that recently in the Give It A Whirl series? And the answer to that question is no, as she explained when I spoke to her earlier this week. So Debbie, Give It A Girl, what is the genesis of this thing?
Well, 4 years ago, I think it was five years ago, they made Give It A Whirl. The definitive history of New Zealand rock and roll. And I was so excited. I was as excited as I used to be watching Radio with Pictures, you know, and music television's never been that great since. But Give It A Whirl was really great. And I sat down and watched it. And because I've been so involved in music for the last 25 years in Auckland, 26 or 7 years here, and touring with bands and being amongst it all, and I've worked for 4 record companies and looked after Ends Records and worked at Mushroom, I sort of had quite a good insight, and I worked at studios as well, so of the actual way the industry worked. But when Give It A Whirl happened, as it went along, I noticed through the 70s that the women were skimmed over and in some cases completely omitted. So I thought, oh, they can't miss out Jenny Morris, they can't miss out Sharon O'Neill, especially, I thought, with Sharon. She was just an absolute foundation singer-songwriter in this country. And it got into the early 80s, and I was aware that there were a lot of, like, Betty Ann Monger and Annie Crummer and Margaret Urquhart just missing. And so I rang the director of the series and said, you know, don't tell me slamming them all into one girls episode, are you? And the news was even worse. He said, we're not doing them at all. And I was just horrified. There were some excuses that there wasn't enough footage, and there was. And so I was going, what the? You know, this is just not right, because I was fiercely aware of the impact of women in this country, and especially to the public, perhaps not to music writers or record companies or, you know, the industry, which can be a tough little business. But definitely I was aware from the public's perspective, their chart placings, their sales, their popularity actually, in many cases, ate the men, you know.
Especially in Australia, didn't they?
Yes, some in Australia. Margaret was massive in Australia. You know, she was up there with Midnight Oil and Farnham around that time. She sold, nearly 4 times platinum, it was, which in Australia was 400,000 albums. And
nearly half. A million.
Yeah,
that's huge, isn't it?
And she's had 3 number ones. Now, you know, Crowded House, the only number one they had in this country was Better Be Home Soon. Out of their whole repertoire, Margaret Hitch has 3 under her belt. You know, I mean, that's incredible. And I was aware of that. And it was sort of Margaret that I was possibly most annoyed about, because she'd been completely overlooked. And yet they really focused on a lot of the guys like Shane Carter and. And they're great, but they don't sell what Margaret has sold. And they weren't, you know, the popularity. I mean, it's a bit like the industry makes you think that these artists are huge, but the reality often is completely different. And so I just thought, well, I have to do something about this. I can't let that go, because it had been touted as the history of New Zealand music, and there were these huge gaps. And I'm not normally someone that sort of protest about women's rights or anything. It's not my kind of thing, but I've been so involved with music, I could see that there were just these huge gaps. And then I realised quite recently that a lot of the research was taken from Stranded in Paradise. And when I had a look at Stranded in Paradise, the book, the women were, you know, a paragraph here. I mean, Cats Away have 1 paragraph, and yet we were the biggest touring act of all time in this country. So, and we were just sort of flippantly discussed, you know, it wasn't even in nothing in depth and full of errors. So, and John Dix has done an incredible job, but there are things missing. And I love the book. I think he's amazing. But he obviously didn't hear himself. Wasn't that interested in the women in music.
And it was a part of the world he hadn't paid attention to, perhaps?
I think so. I think, and you can see the things that, you know, it's all perspective. And John's love of music is a different love of music, say, than mine. So the emphasis would have been that. And I don't want to dwell on that, but certainly when the series was done, it seemed to be the same kind of perspective. And I knew that, in fact, from the public's perspective, that was quite different. So I thought, well, I have to do something about this. I don't know what, and I was in no position to. But I just couldn't let it go, because I knew this would be considered the history.
And you've found that the story, because what you do in this documentary is it's a series, and you're taking these people and taking their story from the start to what they're doing now, and often the most interesting part of the story is what they're doing now, isn't it? That people kind of forget that they haven't stopped performing.
No, and it's just, and once again, that's the perception again of women in music. It's, we're ageist in this country quite badly, even for the guys. You know, David McCartney said, you know, you're dead when you're 33, and he's right. You know, it's even harder for women. But people still love us. It's what I did was I called it Give It a Girl, and I'm making 20 episodes, each episode about one woman, and it's chronological. It's essentially their history up to what they're doing recently or, you know, currently. And I start right back with Leah Mumford and Sharon way back there, and come right up to Kirsten Morrell and Victoria Girling Butcher and Holly Smith at this end. And their stories are chronological with all of the music that they've made for all that time. And Sharon O'Neill is still writing for people and for herself and churning out songs.
And she did sort of disappear out of sight for younger people because of that record company contract hassle in the middle of the 80s that just stole her momentum, didn't she?
Terribly difficult time in the 80s in radio and in record companies, because they were very, very much in control. They now work collaboratively, and the way that contracts are now is that it has to be a two-way thing. And those days, record companies told you what to do, and Sharon had a situation where they tried to make her a Britney Spears and sing other people's songs and look pretty and smile, and she is very pretty, but it was a nightmare for her because obviously she wanted to do her own songs, and so they just reached this place where they couldn't agree, and so they prevented her from recording for 5 years. And she said to me that one good thing that came out of that is that that can't happen anymore, the contracts have changed, which is really great. But she's such an optimist. She's going, oh, one good thing came out of it, Debbie. And I'm thinking, but overall 99% of that story is tragic, and with hindsight that ruined her career. And it was 5 years off at her prime when she was 32, 33, right in the smack in the middle of when she should have just gone through the roof.
And touring has become a lot tougher too, hasn't it? Much more expensive. You had sellout crowds for the last Cats Away tour, and you still couldn't make money on it.
Yeah, that's true. It just, what's happened is it's been corporatised in the sense that there's so many huge, like, you know, the Telecom Christmas party, you know, they've got these huge budgets. They pay big money for everything, including production, and quite often one night, you know, the lighting bill will be $20,000. Those prices then spill over into touring. And to make that money back is impossible. And so I'm constantly, we all are, all the Cats Away, for instance, are asked all the time why aren't you together, why don't you do a gig? And I go, I'd love to. We've got $60,000 because we'll be there. And we've never actually broken up. What prevents us is just the costs of putting a show on. And, you know, it's changing.
People aren't aware of that too, that you organised that whole thing.
Oh, yes.
You know, it was all your own work.
There's this myth that someone puts us on a stage and pays us. I don't know where they got that idea from. We actually take the entire risk and organise everything. So when I go on a stage, I am paying for the security guard, the fireman, the, you know, ushers, the ads, and the $1,000 ads in the Herald, the We take that risk, and we did when we were younger, and it was when I was full of bravado in my 20s and really thought and had no doubt that it would work. I just knew it would. But when I think back now, I cringe. What if it hadn't? You know, I had nothing. I was, you know, I had no money. I was sleeping on the floor in someone's flat. But I just put it on the road with so much belief, and it worked. But you can't do that now because you have to pay deposits and money up front. And also, when you add it all up, the costs of touring are greater than what you can actually take through door. And because music's become so...
Without putting $200 on the door.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, to make it... And people don't value music because we're so used to it being everywhere in our lives, in the background, on television, on the radio, all the time. They don't have to pay for it. They really balk when they turn up and say, when I do a gig somewhere and it's $20 on the door, they, oh, I'm not paying that. You know, and I've got $2,000 worth of expenses to do a tiny little show. So we've got those problems. I mean, Cats Away could definitely go out, but it would be a huge risk, and as much as we'd love to. And the same with all the other women. So you don't see them playing, and it's harder individually. And I always think it's such a shame that people can't see these women.
And it's got great potential for a show to flow on from the documentaries on the radio, doesn't it?
Well, and the thing is that we, between us, you know, if we did all of our, each of us, and there were 10 of us that went on, did our two or three most popular songs, we'd have 2.5 hours of material and hits to do. So, you know, it would be amazing. But it's taken me 4 years to get to this point. But hopefully it'll be on in the next month. I'm hoping, you know, October it'll start.
Debbie Harwood coming up after the break. We go to Sydney to learn about video conferencing.